The newest Razer Blade Studio Edition laptops, and more coming up on today's episode of Lays and Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lays and Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe and follow button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest announcements. Plus, there's a like button. But don't use it until you get to a section of the show that you actually like. Speaking of what's to like, Razer just came out with their new Studio Edition laptops. If you want something to drool over, you'll be hard-pressed between that and Alienware, so we'll be getting into that. We'll also be looking at, will GPS ever become obsolete inside the tech that could replace it? We'll also be taking a look at Google's Messages app gets 500 million Play Store installs. Although I wonder, are those default Play Store installs or are those people actually clicking on? Anyways, we'll also be taking a look at WhatsApp announcing that it will start showing ads in 2020. For gadget news, we'll be taking a look at AMD 16-core 3rd-gen Ryzen. Well, is it coming out or not? Well, we'll find out. And we'll also be taking a look at the tablet computer pulled by a donkey. And finally, we'll be taking a look at League of Legends Mordekaiser. Moid? Wow, if I can talk, that would be great. I know, don't yell at me, okay? I'm new to this. I've only been... well, apparently Mordekaiser, speaking of new, is old, and they decided, well, we gotta rework Mordekaiser, so hopefully you guys don't rage too much. All I gotta say is don't rework Garen. Please don't rework Garen. He's fine as he is. I can get the Challenger with him. I haven't tried it yet, but speaking of which, did you know that the entire data of the world can be stored in 4 grams of DNA? Right, with all the information we have flying around the internet. Well, there you go. Also, did you know that 25% of Americans only have a mobile device to use the internet, not to make phone calls? Incredible, right? Well, all that and more. We usually talk about this stuff on a daily basis here at Tech News Gadget, so lots of fun to be had there. So, moving on. All right, on today in tech history, we always like to take a look back in history, and speaking of which, today, at least in the United States, is Memorial Day, remembering those in the military who have died didn't survive. It's honoring the fallen soldiers of the military here in the United States. I'm not sure if... I know we have listeners in about 75-odd countries around the world. I'm not sure if your country specifically designates a day to honor fallen military individuals or not. You do or don't. Each country is different, but at least here in the United States is designated as a federal holiday, which means everything was off or closed today to honor those fallen in the line of duty for Memorial Day. So our wishes and prayers are with them and their families, and we appreciate the service that they provided for us here in the United States, keeping us safe here and abroad. But being that today is May 27th, 2019, on this day in history, in 1988, Microsoft releases two versions of Windows 2.1, one for 286 computers and one for 386 computers. Well, do you remember this version of Windows? No? Not many people do. It wasn't until version 3 that Windows had any sort of appreciable user base. Prior to that, they're like, I guess people are buying it, so I guess we're doing something right. So Windows 3 came around and like, oh, cool, look at it, we can do stuff. And then they actually started making traction prior to that. They worked out of a garage. Right. So, also, on this day in history, in 1959, MIT shuts down the Whirlwind computer. After almost a year of service, MIT shut down its Whirlwind computer. The machine debuted on Edward R. Murrow's See It Now television series in 1951, showing off its quick speed and large memory compared to other systems at the time. Project director Jay Forrester described the computer as a reliable operating system running 35 hours a week at 90% utility using an electrostatic tube memory that, well, obviously popped and needed to be replaced numerous times. I'm so glad we got beyond that, because I would have started flipping out if we had to replace tubes in computers. Also, they shrunk in size considerably, so they're portable now, so we can walk around with them without having to worry about tubes popping. So, with that out of the way, let's get on over to today's feature story. Feature of stories. Oh, man. Well, Computex, going on right now, is full of the unexpected, and Razer has just delivered on that with the Razer Blade Studio Edition laptops. Now, me personally, speaking for myself here, not the author, it's a hard toss-up for me, but whenever I hear Alienware in the news or Razer in the news, I gotta talk about it. When you want to talk about serious gaming products, and probably most of that is due to the branding and awareness campaigns that these companies have been doing, not to mention the quality of the systems they make, I gotta cover it. So, apparently, Razer is taking things beyond gaming and focusing this one on the creative professionals by adapting their attractive design signature look going straight for the throat of Apple. Now, if it wasn't for the signature white keys of the Mercury White design of the Razer Blade line, you could easily mistake this for a MacBook Pro. Now, this time around, don't expect to be seeing just GeForce cards powering these beautifully crafted machines. You'll also find the RTX Quadro 5000 Mobile is available. So, the Razer Blade Studio Edition will be available in the Mercury White finish, along with 4K display options, memory being boosted to 32 gigabytes as the NVMe drive coming in at 1 terabyte, and the drivers for the Nvidia cards will come preloaded with creatives in mind, prioritizing professional workloads over gaming performance. According to Brad Wilds, SVP of Razer Systems Business Unit, he said, Razer Blades have become the laptop of choice for users desiring uncompromising performance in a premium design. Now, with the power of Nvidia Quadro GPUs, the Razer Blade Studio Edition will exceed the demands of professional content creators. Oh man, if you guys are listening to the podcast version of this, you're totally missing out. Join us over at youtube.com/technewsgadget to get the video of this and any other show that we've posted looking at the Studio Edition, well, at least the 15, coming in the same form factor as the Razer Blade 15 Advanced. The Razer Blade 15 Studio Edition will be featuring a 4K OLED touch display, an Intel Core i7-9750H, and an NVIDIA Quadro RTX 5000 Mobile GPU. Now, there's also a Razer Blade 17 Studio Edition. This one is stepping things up a serious notch in the display realm with a 4K panel, but this time it's in a 120Hz variety for an insanely smooth experience. The CPU will also be getting a shot of juice by going with the Intel Core i9-9880H, and the GPU will be the same as the Razer Blade 15 Studio Edition. Of course, if the NVIDIA Quadro RTX 5000 ever becomes a bit underwhelming, both are compatible with Razer's own Razer Core X eGPU enclosure, just in case you forgot they had that. Here's a couple photos showing them off side by side. Obviously, the smaller edition and a larger edition. Yeah. Razer is pushing forward with their hashtag Made with Blade campaign even harder now that they are directly targeting creatives and professionals with this new lineup of graphics cards. Now, the author, for one, is glad to see the professional GPU space heat up in a mobile area, as they personally know quite a few engineers who would welcome the extra power, but not sure how beneficial the RTX functions will be, but time will tell. Now, pricing and availability. Fortunately, Studio Blade Edition Blades will be made available later this year. Official pricing and availability to be announced at a later date. Now, the real question is, are you excited about this? You looking at getting it? Yes? No? Are you a gaming person? Are you a content creator? Would this kind of tweak the scales in mind for you to get a Razer Edition laptop as opposed to a MacBook Pro? I'm actually kind of wondering if, in terms of pricing, what they'll do is they'll be very competitively priced, right in the same price range, if not below, Apple MacBook Pro currently, just to see if they can start to undercut some of that market value. So in terms of pricing, figure it'll probably come at about that. In terms of customization and whatever else you want to do with it, it'll probably be available on their website, and you can order it to your heart's content. They're usually known for providing whatever customization options you need. So with that being said, love to hear your comments down in the comment section down below. And with that, let's head on over to our next story. Will GPS ever become obsolete? Well, meet the ant-inspired tech that could replace it. Now, for those of you wondering, hey, Taylor, how can I get the show notes for today? Head on over to technewsgadget.net/125. And or you could just click on the show notes for this episode. We have links down in the description, and if you're listening via the podcast, so tap away to your heart's content. Since prehistoric times, humans have navigated Earth by way of the sky. Well, like clockwork, the sun traces a predictable path from east to west every day. After sunset, stars emerge. Though complicated to decipher, constellations are recognizable in their patterns and offer an intricate map of the inverted world, which a trained navigator can use for precise pathfinding. Now, celestial navigation is something of an anachronism, like quill pens and powdered wigs. GPS is today's go-to system, and it's great until it doesn't work. Researchers at universities and some of the world's top tech companies are developing advanced navigational techniques designed to fill in the gaps when GPS fails. Now, for inspiration, many are looking towards desert ants, whose unique navigational abilities have been honed. Although still in their experimental phase, these systems could someday be used to bolster satellite-based navigation or even make it obsolete. Now, have you ever tried to use GPS while traveling through a tunnel or in the shadow of a tall building? Well, you've likely run into the system's frustrating shortcomings. That's because GPS and similar systems rely on signals from multiple satellites orbiting Earth at up to 12,000 miles away. Now, there's about 73 GPS satellites currently in orbit, and at any one time, a handful of them can ping a device almost anywhere on Earth. But if a large enough object blocks a clear line of communication, GPS navigation becomes inoperable. Now, a drop signal is a minor irritation if you're late for a meeting in an unfamiliar city, but for first responders and search and rescue teams, it could mean the difference between life and death. These aren't the only people interested in such a system. GPS-free navigation could help the moon's next visitors, be they humans or robots, map, well, the surface and ensure self-driving never loses track of where they're going. Now, what about this ant that we're talking about? Well, nature is a treasure trove when it comes to inspiration for designs of new tech, and navigational systems are no exception. For the past four decades, researchers at the Aix-Marseille University in France, and I probably murdered that name, but I'm learning. I'm not French, okay? Have designed and refined a series of sensors inspired by insect vision. The latest iteration of their work is AntBot, an autonomous robot with a navigation-based system based on the unique senses and pathfinding abilities of desert ants. Now, keep this in mind, desert ants can walk up to 1 kilometer within 30 minutes, and they can return to the entrance of their nest without worrying of getting lost. So they wanted to investigate how to make this kind of navigation work in robots, so they partnered with the French National Center for Scientific Research. Dupiro and his team developed a robot, Julian, he was an engineer there, who was working on AntBot, developed a robot which, like desert ants, is equipped with UV light sensors capable of detecting a band of polarized light, which it uses to navigate a celestial compass. Interesting, and I got a photo of it right here on the screen. Now, while navigating, desert ants are able to measure their orientation through celestial patterned light, he explained. When entering the atmosphere, the sunlight gets scattered by the atmosphere, and this results in a specific pattern of polarization, which is symmetric according to the location of the sun. And ants can use this to get their orientation. As an added measure, AntBot is capable of counting its steps to determine its rate of movement relative to the sun. These combined aspects help it pinpoint its location with a precision of up to 1 centimeter per 14 meters traveled, compared that to the accuracy of about 5 meters for civilian GPS. Now, this system could be used in vehicles on onboard compasses or delivery drones for last mile delivery. AntBot isn't the only robot using desert ant-inspired navigation. Researchers at the University of Sussex have developed a system that can function without GPS by using algorithms that mimic the desert ant's brain. So, quite impressive. The article goes on to highlight a couple more interesting systems. But yeah, what do you guys think? Are you ready to move on from GPS? Is this tech promising, or is it going to come with its own shortcomings and we should just look for something else entirely? I, for one, well, would love to see something happen that's different, because You're like, well, yeah, the GPS is good within, X amount of feet. Yeah, well, let's shorten it. Why can't we do that? Oh, the GPS, it lost the signal. Well, good, fix it. Oh, I can, it's difficult. Well, maybe we shouldn't have it based off of that system then, and little satellites orbiting in space, because animals here on the ground figure it out quite regularly on their own. And they don't have satellites floating up in space. You want to know where it all is? You want to know where all that crazy high-tech tech is for animals, including birds for migration and butterflies for migration and anything else that goes on? In their head, in their eye, in their ear. It's all there. So, can't wait to see what tech is inspired off of this. Hope you guys are as well. All right, moving on to our next story. Google's Messages app surpasses 500 million Play Store installs. Now, I know I teased, is this a default installation? That's why they had 500 plus installs. Well, Google's Messages app has been slowly making its way to more devices in the Android ecosystem via the Play Store. Recently, the app surpassed 500 million installs, a milestone for any application. Noted by Android Police, Google's Messages app hit this Play Store milestone in the past few days. This number is significant because Google doesn't require phone makers to pre-install this app, there's a kicker, as a part of the Google Mobile Services package. Of course, some devices do still include this app out of the box. Now, for Google's Pixels lineup, as well as Android One devices from Nokia and others, Google Messages is installed and used as a default client for SMS. Thanks to its RCS capabilities, other OEMs, such as Huawei, have also opted to include Messenger as a default client for their device as well. Other names that ship phones with Messages installed include Motorola, LG, and small names such as Essential. Still, this number is very impressive, as it means that quite a lot of users opted to actually install Google's Messages app from the Play Store and replace the client their device came with. It also lands in the top 25 in the communication category in the Play Store as well. So, congratulations, Google. Good job. Hopefully this app works better than Messages for Apple, and seeing as how you're fighting between that and Facebook's Messenger, well, you guys are going to have a whole lot of fun for years to come trying to figure out market share and features and accessibility and usability and everything else that goes along with that. I don't know. Which app do you guys currently use the most for communicating with your friends and family? Do you use Facebook's Messenger? Do you use Apple Messages? Do you use Google's Messages? Love to know down in the comment section down below. That about wraps it up for that one. For me, I use Facebook Messenger. It's really simple, and when I don't have that, I usually use Apple Messages because it's default what's on my phone. Because I have an iPhone. Alright, so now for some not-so-great news. Apparently WhatsApp announces that it will start showing ads in 2020. Now, the era of ad-free messaging is coming to an end, as one of the most popular messaging apps in the world, WhatsApp, announces during the Facebook Marketing Summit in the Netherlands that it will start screening advertisements on its application in 2020. And to my reply to that, I kind of figured it was coming, and if not, it's been teased prior to this stage, but I'm glad to finally see them actually finally announcing it. I mean, how are you going to have a free app pay for itself without allowing advertisements? That's the great conundrum that Facebook had, growing such a large user base and then going, oh, we got to monetize it to figure it out. And he had Google sitting over there going, yeah, go ahead, Facebook. You're not even going to be a thorn in our side, even though you have a lot of users. You actually have a lot of users. Maybe we should come out with our own social networking site. Ooh, I know, it'll be called Google Plus, and that will rival Facebook, and it'll show them. Oh, shoot, they monetized. They're actually making a lot of money now. They actually just, oh no. What do you mean nobody's on Google Plus anymore? Oh no! Well, there you go. That was the rise and fall of Google Plus in a nutshell, and then Google actually went, well, I think we should probably take Facebook seriously now, because we used to laugh and tease and joke about it, but now we actually gotta crack down on this, and then they bought WhatsApp. Facebook did. And then Google's like, we don't talk about this. Well, what attracted people the most to the messaging app is that they can text and call their friends and family without any disruptions, unlike other messaging platforms. The Facebook-owned company revealed that the texting experience will soon change for over a billion users worldwide. WhatsApp will bring Stories ads in its status product in 2020, tweeted head of media at BeConnect Agency. Now, on both Insta Stories and Facebook Stories, users can post photos or videos that disappear in 24 hours. Insta Stories on Instagram and Facebook Stories on Facebook have ads that appear while the user is tapping or swiping through the videos and pictures. Similarly, the ads are expected to roll under the status section, and they do have photos of how the ads are expected to look like. Ads that click to WhatsApp and on different platforms, as well as status ads. Now, in this way, Facebook integrates all of their products together by allowing users to cross-post their stories as well as cross-displaying ads that redirect users to their platforms on Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. In-app advertising has been considered a popular marketing tool for apps starting to gain virality. It's considered effective monetization strategy for mobile publishers, although some disagree with that, and some say, yeah, but you implemented a little bit too late. Well, to each their own, and that's always going to be the trade-off. Keep this in mind. If you sign up for something for free and you get ads on it, don't complain about it because you didn't pay for a premium experience. When you signed up for free, you agreed to the terms and conditions of it, which allow, to a certain extent, the company that you signed up for free to use your information, your data, to go and sell you to their advertiser base and have the advertisers come to them and say, yeah, we have millions of people on it. Go ahead and buy ads from us. And you're included in it because, well, you agreed to the terms of service. And if you don't like that, well, just turn off everything, blow up everything, and go be a monk and live under a rock, or, well, crack down on however much information you want to be public. So that's on you. But if you agree to the terms of service, you agree to the terms of service. So mobile devices, unlike desktop or laptop computers, are more often used only by one person. That means that the apps on a particular device are closely connected to the personal life and daily habits of its owner. This also makes the in-app environment an ideal place for advertisers to create effective and personal advertising touchpoints. Now, while many users have found the introduction of ads on Instagram and Facebook frustrating, many have gotten used to ad consumption. Now, advertising companies have to work hard to capture the user's attention in seconds to avoid getting skipped or tapped away. In either case, what I would really love to start seeing from advertisers is to create high-quality, valuable ads, not just splatterboard it all over the place and go, it's all over the place. Well, go ahead, man. Why do our conversions suck? Maybe because your marketing sucks. Retry that. So there you are. That's your news on that. And you got a little bit of extra thoughts from me. So let's move on, shall we? So AMD introduced the 16-core 3rd-gen Ryzen, but is this the Intel killer delayed or just fake news? Now, if you've been watching the news from Computex this week, you'll likely have been watching reports regarding, well, Ryzen and keynote speeches today, wondering when that extra slide would arrive with the expected 16-core CPU. So far, it hasn't shown up. Shortly after the keynote, the internet was awash with both positive and negative opinions about the 3rd-gen Ryzen, with some of the latter focusing on the lack of a 16-core part. Now, as usual, everything we knew up until that point was based on supposed leaks and rumors, such as Threadripper being canceled and various models that we're now fairly sure do not exist appearing at retailer websites. However, there's plenty of evidence, some fairly convincing, that suggest AMD has simply delayed its launch rather than what could be called the Ryzen 9 3950X never existing in the first place. So we've already seen under the hood of the Ryzen 9 3900X, and there are clearly two core chiplet dies as well as the I/O die. Now, if you are skeptical, then that is fairly convincing evidence. It's highly unlikely that AMD has used one 8-core CCD and one 4-core CCD and has instead included two 8-core CCDs but disabled 4 cores on the Ryzen 9 3900X, dropping it down from 16 to 12 cores. Physically, we're there, and that's the most important thing, but the CPU has been spotted behind the scenes. There's been much evidence the 16-core CPU exists as any other, but some even clear came from Tech Yes's City's YouTube channel, which claims to have gone behind the scenes at AMD's event today and has seen that 16-core AMD CPU up and running up to 4.25 GHz. Now, the score isn't dissimilar to the one that they added, the author at least, to their CPU performance graph a few days ago, which you can see below. And as you can see, a spectacular result for a mainstream desktop CPU. In case you didn't see the photo, here it is. Boom. Clocks in right about there. So, yeah. They also go on to just explain more information about the differences between the Ryzen 9 core, or the 9, the 7, the 5s. So, obviously going along with that are different motherboards and capabilities that can handle that power. So, we'll definitely see. Now, most likely, AMD is likely waiting to see what Intel plans are with Cascade Lake. Didn't have quite the 16-core CPU specs nailed down in time. Perhaps the most logical explanation for its omission thus far. So we'll just have to wait and see what goes on with the Cascade Lake CPUs. Very sound decision, for the simple reason that the 16-core CPU has proven itself to be capable of toppling the current Intel desktop flagship, the Core i9-9980XE. Now, needless to say, AMD already has a spectacular lineup. And for those who are interested in testing it, can't wait to test it out. But, yep, we'll have to wait to see how this final little chapter plays out. Now, moving on to some interesting gadget news. Did you know that there's a tablet computer pulled by Donkey? Well, back in 2016, mobile technology, the likes of which had not been seen before, rolled into the remote community of Funda Haluro in Mozambique. Now, the reason why I tell you this story is you don't hear these kind of stories, and quite frankly, I wish more of these stories would show up. So, what does this article have to say? While pulled by Donkey, the container consisted of four LCD screens powered by solar panels. It was a mobile roadshow, starting with music to draw a crowd, and then switching to a three-minute film on the biggest of the screens provided. Now, while the topic, digital literacy, was not the most entertaining, it was engaging for the audience, many of whom have never seen a screen or moving images before. After the film, the audience was invited to use smaller touchscreen tablets to answer a series of questions about what they had seen. There are prizes of t-shirts and caps for those with the highest scores. Now, for those who couldn't read, the questions were posed in a diagram form. Now, when we arrive in a community, we try and make it a party, said Diane Ahmed, founder of the community tablet. We want to attract people, and we do it with music. Sub-Saharan Africa is projected to have 634 million mobile users by 2025, up from 250 million at the end of 2017, according to GSM Association, the trade body for mobile carriers. Adoption of mobile technology has transformed lives from providing people with a way to bank for the first time to helping farmers improve their crop yield. But some countries fare better than others. While in Kenya, mobile penetration is at 91%, in Mozambique, less than half of its 31 million population have mobile connections. So, also showing some photos here of, for some, having their first ever interaction with a screen, and they're starting with music, so they got a couple photos here showing that. Now, the community tablet, which is the company behind this, aims to fill this gap, and the entertainment is just a precursor to the real point of the show, to educate and empower remote and rural communities on a wide range of topics, from public health to mobile banking, and to why it's important to take part in elections. Mr. Ahmed, who was born in Mozambique, got the idea as he watched his two young sons and saw how addicted to their tablets they were and how quickly they learned how to build things by watching YouTube videos. I said to myself that this can be used in rural communities where people aren't able to do basic things because they've never had a tutorial, he said. So, with that idea in mind, he went and created Community Tablet. There have been plenty of other initiatives to increase the use of technology in countries such as Mozambique, often with patchy results. The One Laptop Per Child initiative, for instance, aimed to transform education but failed to deliver on its promises. So, the reality of Africa means that experiments like One Laptop Per Child or other ways of distributing smartphones, unfortunately for various reasons, do not work out. It's impossible to give a tablet to everybody. It's too expensive, and you really don't know if they're going to use it or they're going to sell it. So, in particular, they decided to try this out. Seems to be working great so far. Projects like the community tablet are a great example of appropriate, almost frugal innovation, focusing on what works rather than what looks good. We have the ability to solve many developmental problems with tools available today, but too often we're too busy chasing the next shiny innovation along with the cash that goes along with it. So Mr. Ahmed agrees his is a very simple solution, describing it as an adequate way of supplying digital education to people in rural communities. It's safe and robust, it cannot be broken, and it cannot be stolen. The project makes money from non-government organizations, many of which have been trying to reach remote communities via more traditional methods, such as lectures and reaching out pamphlets. Now, if pamphlets get thrown away, well, That's fine. Most people don't listen after 2 or 3 minutes, but I actually see people showing up. Well, it's been a lot of tangible results. And for some, they've said after a civic education campaign, voting increased by 45%. A family planning campaign saw a 27% increase in contraceptive intake in health centers. And a financial inclusion campaign resulted in 68% more new bank accounts being opened. So it's exciting to see this, along with some health benefits and, well, just ease of use. So, what do you guys think? Tablet, computer, pulled by a donkey? Unlikely, but hey, in Africa, works out great. And it's actually just what the people need. Moving on to our final article of today. Yes, we finally have some gaming news. And it's the title I messed up on way back when. Well, here's your first look at League of Legends, Mordekaiser. And I did it again. Mordekaiser rework. Now, it's been on the cards for a while now, while lead champion producer Riven Meyerlis announced that the Master of Metal would be getting a new look earlier this year. He's needed a change for significantly longer than that, and many of you know. Although, I think he did do an earlier tag. I don't know, I swear he was reworked not too long ago. Well, we now have a better idea of what form that will take. In a post earlier today, the developer gave us our first look at the champion's new abilities. While significant chunks of his kit are pretty standard, they're undergoing some major changes. Neither his W nor his E will remain the same after the update. The most notable change, however, is to his ultimate ability. While Mordekaiser has been, in the past, able to conjure a ghostly version of the champions or dragons that he helps to kill, that's set to change. Mordekaiser's new ultimate, Realm of Death, is the solo laner's dream, letting him take on a champion of his choosing in a one-on-one battle to the death. Well, without further ado, let's take a look at those new abilities. Now, his passive is called Darkness Rise. Mordekaiser's basic attacks deal bonus magic damage. After 3 spells or attacks against a champion, Darkness Rises deals damage to nearby enemies and gives movement speed until Mordekaiser is out of combat. His Q is called Obliterate. Mordekaiser slams down his mace, dealing damage in an area or bonus damage to a single enemy. His W is Indestructible. The Evil Overlord absorbs 25% of damage taken and damage dealt. Casting once generates a shield with this value. Mordekaiser can cast again to consume 50% of the shield for health. His E is now called Death Grasp. It's a passive where he gains 25% magic penetration. I guarantee you that one's going to be changed in patch notes down the road. But if it's active, a deadly claw drags enemies towards him, dealing damage. Now, what about his new ultimate, R? Well, Realm of Death. Mordekaiser banishes a single enemy champion to the Death Realm for a 7-second 1v1, stealing a percent of their core stats. If he kills his target, he consumes their soul, keeping their partial stats until they respawn. Now, to be honest, were you okay with that? Well, the Q and W in particular are pretty much the same, but Death's Grasp should help offer some much-needed crowd control. Now, what the heck kind of ultimate is this? It borrows pretty heavily from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Animated series Shadow Realm, but, well, you can gloss over that in favor of the 7-second 1v1 that Mordekaiser challenges his enemies to. Interested to see how that plays out. It's really anybody's guess, but it'll certainly be fun to see it in action. As for when you'll be taking your own trip to the Death Realm, it's kind of uncertain right now, but it's very possible we could be getting our first look in the lead up to patch 9.12, so keep your eyes on the PBE next week. So, a 7-second 1v1 against Mordekaiser? Oh my goodness! Does that mean I can play Garen? I can Q silence him and then smash him with the ultimate with the sword raining down from above, blowing him up to smithereens? Well, I won't get any stats from that, but it'll be a pretty awesome 1v1 that nobody else will see, or will they see it, but they won't be able to do anything about it because we'll be immune to interacting with them until the 7 seconds are up. Interesting rework to be sure of. Does that apply to now Dragon and Baron, or is it just specifically to champions? Well, we'll find out more, obviously, once we know more. And with that, that wraps up this episode of the latest in tech news. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. Now, I will take this time to say that next week there will be no shows. I will be out of town the first week of June in very limited to no internet access. I'm going to be on vacation with my family, so there will not be any shows at all next week, the first week of June. Just want to let you guys be aware of that. The latest in tech news can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss out on the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.